It took the death of a tiny baby, a rose, for a young man to demonstrate that every single life has value, even those of fragile, disabled children. She seemed insignificant, but her life mattered, and sharing her story means she will never be forgotten. Hundreds of children have received love, hope, and opportunity because of Rose's short life, and that number grows daily. China's Oasis is the story about International China Concern and David Gotz, who started it at the age of 22. Here to tell me a little more about Rose's story and about China's Oasis. Joining me live from Vancouver is David Gotz himself. David, a very good, very early morning to you.
Yeah, good morning to you, Giles, too. It's great to be with you today.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you for joining us on the show. Tell me a little bit about how you came to be in China then. What led you to China and how you discovered Rose?
Well, my career really into non-profit work and working with children didn't take the conventional route. I actually began with a career in banking, working for Barclays Bank in the UK. And that was the direction I thought I was going to go. But I found about 2 years into that career that I was searching for something with more meaning. I was searching to try and do a work that somehow made a difference in people's lives. And so I made a decision to leave Barclays and to move to Hong Kong. And a lot of that was driven by my own personal sense of faith. I really believe from a faith perspective that it's important for us to be reaching out and helping those in need. And so I moved to Hong Kong at the age of 19 with this desire to find some kind of work I could get myself involved in. And traveled in China for a while and felt like that was the country for me, just a real sense of connection with the culture, with the people. And so after spending a couple more years learning to speak Mandarin, I felt like I was really ready to do something. And it was around that time that I got an invitation to visit a Chinese government-run orphanage, and that really changed my life.
So what did you see then when you walked into the orphanage that made that change?
You know, I walked in there, and when I think back now, it's 25 years, I think back to the expectations I had. And you know, I knew I was going to see children that had been abandoned because their parents were no longer able to take care of them, or perhaps their parents were no longer living. And I hoped what I would see is boys, girls, children who were having their lives restored. You know, they'd gone through the pain of abandonment, but they were being cared for well. That was my hope. But when I walked through the door, I wasn't prepared at all to find babies and children who were in such a terrible condition that many of them had given up the will to live. They would sit in the courtyard or they would lie in their beds just like rag dolls because they weren't getting any care. They were getting no attention whatsoever. And, you know, walking from room to room, my senses were assaulted by the sights, the sounds, the smells. Seeing babies, five babies jammed into each crib instead of one, and realizing as I looked down into the faces of these babies that they were malnourished and they were neglected, they were starving. And they were so malnourished that when you unfolded their clothing, you could count their ribs and just see, you know, there was no flesh on them at all. And I looked into the faces of these little babies. You know, we've all seen beautiful babies, newborn babies, filled with life and potential, and you know, they're nurtured and cared for, and they grow to become people who can do whatever they want to do. But I was looking into the face of babies that I knew had absolutely no future. I knew in my heart when I looked into their eyes, not only had they given up the will to live, not only did they not have the physical ability to continue to live, but they would be gone within 2 weeks, gone within 3 weeks. And that just overwhelmed me. And that was just the first room, you know? And so walked into another room and saw toddlers, 2, 3 years old, tied to metal chairs. And, you know, there were so few workers at that time that were able to care for the staff because the Chinese social welfare system was so understaffed at that point that it was much easier to tie the children into chairs than it was to have them running around. And so, you know, many of these 2, 3 year olds would sit in a wooden or a metal frame chair, tied at the wrists, tied at the feet for 12 to 14 hours a day. And they would literally have like a bucket underneath where they sat, and there was a hole in the seat. They would just go to the toilet in that place. And, you know, the smell was overwhelming. The hopelessness was overwhelming. And, you know, coming from England, I just didn't know what to do, didn't know how to make sense of what I was seeing. But I continued on. You know, I was visiting a friend who had begun to do some work in that place, and we saw older children with disabilities in a very similar condition. Mm. And then finally came to kind of the last part of this institution, and kind of came to the doorway, and my friend turned and said, you know, I'm not really sure you want to necessarily see what I'm, you know, what's behind this door. And I couldn't imagine, Giles, anything worse than what I'd seen: babies, toddlers, children, malnourished, starving, dying. And she took me into this room, and as we were going in, she explained to me that, you know, back in the early 90s, there were so many babies that were being abandoned in China, so many healthy baby girls and children with disabilities, that literally every day new babies would be left in the train station or the bus station. And these babies would eventually come in through the police to this welfare center. But it was a flood that was unending, and the staff didn't know what to do. The system couldn't cope. And so the sickest and the weakest ones would be plucked from their already terrible conditions and placed in rooms, and they would just be left there. And I walked into that room, and for the first time in my life, I saw dead children, you know, 22 years old, walked into this room and saw three little girls, all of them babies. One was still alive, but the other two had already died, and they just died from dehydration and neglect. And I saw that and was so totally overwhelmed, didn't know what to do with it, came away from that day and just sat down. And, you know, here I was, 22 years old, I'd left England, looking for some kind of mission to get involved with, learned to speak Chinese. And yet when I was faced with this need, I have to tell you that all I wanted to do was run away. I felt like I just wanted to get out of there, because what I saw was beyond what I'd ever imagined I could encounter. And yet I also knew in my heart that if somebody doesn't do something, then the situation never changes. And so I remember going to sleep that first night, a very sort of fitful sleep, and then waking the next day and going back, and then hearing about this little 4-hour-old baby girl who'd come in that morning. And this was this little girl, baby Rose, as I called her. She'd been born and then put on the street by her family for whatever reason, naked, and then brought into the welfare center just a few hours later. And I looked down into this little girl's perfect face, and I knew that this perfect baby girl would die unless somebody did something. And it was like everything all came down to that one moment, looking into her face and knowing that I had a choice to make. Either I would reach out my hands, pick her up and try to save her life, or I would turn away. And I knew that that face would haunt me if I didn't do something. And so my friend and I, we took this little girl with the permission of the welfare center director, and we cared for her. We tried to care for her through that day, but we could tell she was sick. And so we put her in the hospital that night and then went back to check on her and find out what the situation was. And we were told, oh, she's dead. And in that moment, learning that that little girl had died, I knew that she would have many, many more children that would come after her, many healthy baby girls, many more children with disabilities, and that would be their same fate, their same future, unless someone got involved. And I looked around and I couldn't see anyone. And so I made the decision that, you know, someone's got to start somewhere. And even if it ended up just being me, then perhaps this pair of hands that I had could make a difference to one or two children. And, you know, never imagined the journey that it would take me on, really.
I mean, the thing is, and it's a shocking revelation that you're going through here, is that you're a 22-year-old Westerner in a country that is perplexing to a lot of people's minds, but you've picked up on something that is a basic human hopefully behavioral trait, which is basically wanting to protect, you know, the defenseless and the people that you're talking about, babies, the disabled, people with disabilities or children with disabilities and girls, were a result of the policy that China had been implementing up to that point.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the one-child policy that was brought in to limit the Chinese population certainly was responsible in large part for that circumstance. It is a complex situation in China. If they hadn't had some kind of policy to limit their population, then the fear was that they would encounter mass starvation, because Chinese families were used to having very large families at that time. So they brought in this one-child policy, but one of the unintended consequences was that when people gave birth to a baby girl, they knew that that baby girl would grow up, she would marry into her husband's family, and she would become part of his family. whereas they needed a son that would grow up and take care of them, the parents, in their old age. And so there were many social factors, cultural factors at play, but this all led to the abandonment of millions of baby girls over the years, and of course, a large number of children with disabilities. And, you know, fast forwarding through to today, of course, healthy baby girls are no longer abandoned in China. There has been a lot of change over 25 years, and baby girls now are valued and seen in many ways as valuable as baby boys. But what we see and where our work focuses is on children with disabilities, because even though culture towards girls has changed, the stigma against children and babies born with disabilities and the circumstances into which they're born, the lack of support, often still leads to abandonment. And every year there are still tens, if not hundreds of thousands, of babies and children with disabilities that are abandoned.
As a 22-year-old young man, though, how did you go about, because we've all thought to ourselves, something, we've got to do something about this, something must be done. Everybody's had an issue, they've gone, we must do something about this. Most of us then go, but what can we do? How did you, as a 22-year-old, marshal your forces, get people involved and come and set up China's Oasis?
Well, I began to just talk to my friends. That was the first thing that I did. And, you know, I would talk to anybody that would listen. And usually the response I would get was, wow, I had no idea. People were shocked. They were horrified to hear about the circumstances that I had seen just a few weeks earlier. And as I talked to my friends in different parts of the world, what I began to hear was people saying to me, look, we want to do something. We want to stand with you. And so very quickly, I realized I wasn't going to be on my own. It wasn't just going to be me with one pair of hands, but there were people from universities in the UK and churches in Australia and people from Hong Kong and Taiwan, friends who began to tell friends. And all of a sudden, we began to have physiotherapists and occupational therapists and doctors and nurses, social workers, and those people that just simply had a heart and a passion to help children began to contact me and say, look, I'd like to go. And so pretty quickly, I found myself taking a group of professionals into China to go work in one of these welfare centers to see what we could do. And I knew that the Chinese government would look and see a 22-year-old young English man who, yes, he spoke, you know, some Chinese, but really, who was I? And so I knew that I couldn't just do it as an individual, but I needed to actually have a formal official title and organization. And so International China Concern really was born out of the need to really have a platform from which to engage with the Chinese government. And that's what we did, started taking in groups of people. And at the beginning, of course, you know, we were met with a lot of suspicion. In China, Westerners going in, you know, there's a lot of history, a lot of imperial kind of warfare that's happened in China that's left the Chinese wary when people come in. And of course, there's often been an attitude of, you know, here we are, let us sort out your problems. And so we came in with a very different attitude. We came in, hopefully, in a real spirit of humility, not wanting to point out the problems, but simply saying, look, we want to support the children, and we want to support you as a government in how you care for these children. And we're an international nonprofit organization, albeit a very small one, and we want to walk alongside you. And what we were met with was a welcome, a surprising welcome. The government opened their arms to us and said, look, come. And as we worked with them over a period of about a year and a half, taking in these teams every 3 months, we began to build a relationship of trust with the government that really then opened up long-term opportunities and really began the next step into developing projects that have really transformed the lives of hundreds, if not thousands, of children.
I was going to say, those projects, what do they involve? Because you've taken these children in, but it's not just taking them in, it's obviously providing them so they can live a meaningful existence.
Exactly. And so, you know, there are two real aspects to the work that we've done with abandoned children. The first one is that, first of all, we see every life as worthy of dignity, worthy of love, and worthy of care. And so our first and foremost goal is to really bring transformation into the lives of children. When a child is abandoned into a welfare center in China, first of all, they've lost the protection of their parents, and they go into a social welfare system that is often very ill-equipped to be able to support them with the disabilities that they have. And so International China Concern and my staff team of about 300 people, we come alongside these children. We bring them into care facilities that we independently manage. It's done in partnership with the government. But International China Concern manages group homes and care units, all different modes of care. And we're able to bring children into an environment where they will receive the love and the nurture that they need. But then alongside that love and nurture, we provide the professional services that they need. And so we have dedicated teams of physical and occupational therapists, nurses and doctors, educators. And we're able to take that child on a journey through providing them, first of all, with the home and the love that they need, but then with the opportunity that they need to learn and to optimize their physical potential, their mental and emotional potential. And we reintegrate children back as they grow into local communities. And so we also want to maximize their social potential as well. And so, you know, the work of ICC is a very broad-based work. But the second goal of doing all of that has been to establish a model that the Chinese government can take a look at and say, so if we really want these children to flourish, that's what it should look like. It needs to be this kind of care, this kind of nurture, with these kind of support services. And those are exactly the kind of services that, you know, people in Spain, people in the UK, people in places like Canada would expect a government to be providing. But China's not there yet. They're getting there slowly. We're walking alongside them. And we're providing the model, the example, if you like, that can help them get there hopefully a lot more quickly than if they had to reinvent the wheel themselves.
And presumably you've seen a shift in government policy and also in social policy, in the way that people deal with, Chinese people deal with the disadvantage in their community.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, when we first began, you know, we would take the children that we cared for out to the local parks, and we were surprised and horrified, really, at the comments that we would hear. You know, and families that we interact with, they tell us when, if they have a child with a disability, that, you know, they've been fearful to take their child outside because of the kind of comments that are made about the child and how hurtful that is to them. But over the years, that's begun to change. And, you know, one of the watershed moments was the hosting of the Olympics in Beijing. Because as we all know, after the Olympics is finished, comes the Paralympics. And that was the first time, I think, in the nation of China that China had really seen the potential of people with disabilities. They saw their own country's athletes taking gold on the podium. And they were excited and cheering for people who previously would have simply been shut away and not really given any kind of platform. And so there have been these shifts within Chinese culture, Chinese society, and as well Chinese government policy that now make the situation very different today than it was, although many of the challenges still remain, and there are still far too many children with disabilities constantly being abandoned.
And why did you think the time was right now to write the book, China's Oasis?
Well, you know, it's 25 years this year since International China Concern began. And we talked about writing this story for many, many years. And every time we came to the idea of telling this story, we just didn't feel the time was right. We knew that some of the story that we were going to tell would be a difficult story for, you know, China to hear. It's hard sometimes to have somebody hold up a mirror and to see some of the situations that exist within a society that, of course, the government wishes didn't exist. But we felt at this point, as we approached this 25th anniversary, that, you know, ICC has had a long-term partnership with the Chinese government. We have one of the strongest relationships with the Chinese government of really any nonprofit that's working in China, and we are a valued partner. And we felt like it was the right time to tell the story, not to point out the problems, not to criticize, but actually to say, look at how far things have come. Look at how many lives have been changed. Look at the journey that both this work and the government has gone on in the last 25 years. We all know the story of China's transformation into economic powerhouse. But sometimes we fail to see that during that kind of transformation, there are still aspects of society where people really still need our help. And, you know, that's what we want to show. We want to show China is transforming. They're catching up in so many spheres. In this particular sphere, there's still quite a journey for them to do, particularly for families that have children with disabilities. You know, one of the big parts of our work is not just to care for those that are have been abandoned, but it's also to support families that have children with disabilities so that abandonment never even has to take place. And the sad reality is that even though there are many more supports for families in China that have a child with a disability, unfortunately, there's still not enough. And we meet families regularly who are at that point of desperation. You know, it's hard to imagine, if you are a parent, what it would be like to be told that your child has a disability, and then when the doctor walks out of the room, to be left completely and utterly alone, with no social workers, no therapists, no development specialists, nobody to walk alongside you. And the feeling is one of isolation. We hear this all the time, families saying, you know, after I was told my child had a disability, we were just on our own. And often, you know, the child's extended family don't want to know because of the stigma of having a child with a disability.
I'm going to have to, I'm really sorry, David. Going to run out of time, unfortunately. The book is called, if people want to find out some more information, there's a website presumably they can go to?
Yeah, absolutely. If they want to go and find out more about the book, they can go to chinasoasis.com and they'll be able to look up information there.
The book is called China's Oasis. Go to chinasoasis.com. So sorry to have to cut you short, David.
No problem.
And it's available on Monarch. David Gotz, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.